morning. I'd like to speak to you today as a first-generation immigrant and a grateful member of this church. Consider these words from the book of Leviticus. The alien who resides with you shall be as the citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. Prior to the 1880s, all you had to do to become an American was to show up. Many of your own forebears did just that in waves of unchecked migration that were as alarming back then as they seem to be for some now. Of course, many of those forebears, including many of mine, had no choice in the matter. They were torn from their families and brought to this continent as slaves, a stain that we have yet to expurgate. I came to America from Cuba at the age of 7 in 1953 during the Eisenhower administration. We opted for a better life and left everything behind save for a cardboard suitcase, some thin winter-colored clothing, and 75 precious dollars. My parents planned for a pre-dawn arrival at Idlewild, now JFK International Airport in New York, to give themselves enough time to pull together a life for us out of thin air. Where would we stay that night, let alone the following week? Where would they find jobs tomorrow? And where would I go to school? For people like us, the 1950s in New York were not the good old happy days of yore. Race and ethnicity singled us out sharply. We settled in the west side of Manhattan in a neighborhood straight out of Bernstein's West Side Story. And as you might expect from that, we were all written off as just Puerto Ricans. People to be mistrusted, avoided, and feared, even though ironically, the aliens who reside with you in that case were all American citizens by birth. I was spared the worst of that situation by a strong home life and the local parochial school, unfortunately closed now. However, prejudice was palpable even there among some of my fellow students, their parents, and some of the clergy. For my father, a decent job as an electrician was simply out of the question. No Puerto Ricans. That was the blunt and simple explanation. The same was true in trying to rent a decent home. My mother earned some money working in a sweatshop in the garment district. 65 years after the fact, 65 years after the fact, the indignities that my family endured are still very raw. They still hurt in a manner that I pray you will never have to fully understand or appreciate. But do remember Leviticus. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. Things ultimately worked out for us and for the country too, as has been the case with all those earlier alarming waves of immigration. My father ultimately got a good, transformative job, and we became American citizens. We even bought a modest house. With much sacrifice by my parents, I was the first in my family to go to college and beyond. Parenthetically, when access to Cuba was closed off in the 1960s, it was Puerto Rico that became our beloved second homeland. And I urge you to remember her moment of peril generously. As you might imagine, whenever I get a little frazzled by some little this or that, like when I got drafted in 1969, the heroics of my parents tends to put things in perspective. They, however, would have been the first to tell you that they were just ordinary folk. I would point out that they were ordinary folk who behaved extraordinarily nonetheless. And that's a good thing to keep in mind during troubling times like these. J. Jesus knows that there is more strength in us than we can possibly imagine, and he challenges and encourages us incessantly to do better. That is, after all, the gist of today's reading. In conclusion, before I turn to Susan, let me give special thanks for this good and diverse church, a place where we can all be special, yet ordinary, and of particular comfort for me, where we can be unique but not different. I urge you to support her generously.
Our story together started in 1990. We met when Manuel was a scientist at Merck in solving complex scientific calculations using many hours of computer time, and I sold computers to Merck for IBM. We were introduced to Old South by the minister who married us in the church I grew up in, Wayne Presbyterian Church in Pennsylvania. The minister had one enthusiastic suggestion when asked if he knew of churches that he could recommend to us in the Boston area, Old South. At the time, I thought it was really amazing that a Presbyterian minister in Pennsylvania would know enough about a congregational church in Boston to recommend it so highly. But over the past month, we've heard this story several times. We heard it from Richard and Bob and their minister in San Francisco, and from Carol and Amy and their minister in Seattle. Jesus said, "Let your light shine before others, that they may see your good works and give glory to God who is in heaven." Clearly, the light from Old South is shining brightly far and wide. After settling in Boston, we visited a number of churches. Manuel was raised Catholic, so we attempted to find a middle ground between the Catholic Church and the Presbyterian tradition. We came to Old South first, and it was the only church that we kept coming back to between visits to local Catholic churches and Episcopal churches and other congregational churches. Ultimately, living in Lexington, we concluded when our oldest son was born that the only way we were going to get to church on time is if we went to church in Lexington. And even then, we didn't always get to church on time. February 12th is the first anniversary of our joining Old South Church. There are three broad reasons why we give to Old South and why we decided to increase our gift this year. First, at a time when it's impossible to read the newspaper without getting knots in your stomach, reading about issues that include families that are being ripped apart by new immigration rules, racial injustice, and environmental safeguards being rolled back, it's important to support a force for justice, equality, and hope. Since we've been at Old South Church, the church voted to become a Level 2 sanctuary church. There have been educational discussions on racial inequality, programs on environmental conservation, and the church participated with the Greater Boston Interfaith Organization, organizing members to preserve the Affordable Care Act and to build more affordable housing in Boston. Old South and its members are personally involved in actions for justice, equality, and hope. Second, on a personal level, I need a sanctuary where on a weekly basis I can come and shut out the mundane and often troubling aspects of everyday life and reflect on larger issues. Gwen Ifill, the late award-winning journalist, was credited with saying that if she didn't go to church on Sunday, she felt a little flatter the whole week. This really resonates with me. I need to be challenged by Nancy, John, and Anthony's sermons, to be uplifted by the wonderful music program here, and to take the opportunity to participate in adult education to deepen my faith. The third reason that we give is the extraordinary legacy of Old South. Old South has been a beacon of light for years, from its beginnings in 1669, when it took a stand on membership and baptism, to the Revolutionary War years, which saw Old South members among the vanguard of revolutionaries, to the Civil War, the fight for civil rights, and now to the work that's being done today. Old South has been faithful to Jesus' teaching to let the light shine. Now we are stewards of that light. Why do Manuel and I give? We give as generously as we can in order to keep the light from Old South burning today. Thank you for warmly welcoming us to join you in this work.